From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Welcome to the first show of 2026, and there is a lot to discuss. The state capitol is in full swing this week. A new leader in the legislature will be officially sworn in this afternoon, and Governor Gavin Newsom will kick off his final year in office with back-to-back events. His final State of the State address, followed by his January budget proposal outlining his priorities for the upcoming fiscal year. But we're going to start things off with the U.S. capture of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro over the weekend. The surprise military operation celebrated by the Trump administration, but this extremely rare move is also stoking condemnation from critics concerned about acting against congressional and international law. Fallout that also sparked protests over the weekend, including here in Sacramento. Joining us now is Politico California Playbook co-author Dustin Gardner and Cap Radio politics reporter Gerardo Zavala. Welcome, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Happy New Year. Good to be here.
Happy New Year. Okay, Dustin. So Maduro, the now former Venezuelan president, he made his first court appearance today in federal court in New York after being captured in a surprise military operation along with his wife over the weekend. In the 48 hours since, there's been an outpouring of reaction over the forceful removal of a president. But first, just get us up to speed how we got to this point.
Really, this has very quickly become a kind of a surprising escalation. In hindsight, maybe it shouldn't have been. The U.S. was amassing forces, including aircraft carriers in the Caribbean in preparation for this. And we had seen, you know, the Trump administration making strikes on drug boats. And these all seemed to be precursors to this escalation and this the arrest of Maduro and basically the occupation of the Venezuelan government. And this is very quickly becoming an issue in California politics, especially with the midterm elections coming up next year. And Republicans and Democrats so far seem pretty squarely divided among partisan lines in the key swing congressional races here. You know, you have Democrats saying, you know, that they're concerned about this being a return to forever wars and this being a violation of congressional authority and international law. And then you have Republicans, you know, in some of these swing races saying that Maduro was a thug and that, you know, they're giving President Trump a lot of credit for taking him out and really, you know, trying to appeal to the sympathies of people, the Venezuelans that had fled the country. And you know, there's quite a few immigrants in this country that fled the country because of Maduro's reign and because of the communist government there.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, this isn't the first time that President Trump has taken aim at Maduro or Venezuela. His administration filed criminal charges during his first term in office. And you mentioned that the reaction is kind of falling along party lines. But overall, did this forceful removal of a sitting president, did it come as a surprise to public and elected officials in California?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're really off to the races at the start of the year here with this kind of just striking news that not only did the U.S. capture and arrest a foreign leader, we have President Trump saying that he wants to run the country indefinitely and even have U.S. oil companies take over the infrastructure. And you had political leaders from former Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Governor Gavin Newsom all saying that, you know, this is just sort of an unprecedented unilateral act on the part of a president saying that he's going to occupy and run the government of a foreign country without any sort of congressional input.
Mm. Gerardo, you and Cap Radio producer Greg Michak, you covered this over the weekend. What have some of our local Congress members said?
Yeah, so we spoke to Democratic Congressman Ami Berra, who represents Sacramento County. Here's what he had to say.
The week before we went on the holiday recess, the administration briefed us, and we asked directly if there were going to be any attacks on land, and they absolutely misled us. So what they did is a real heinous disregard for the authority of Congress.
Barrett told us Congress will be demanding answers about the administration's plans in Venezuela, particularly Trump's suggestion that the U.S. could temporarily run the country. But Republicans seem to be in support of the operation. In a Saturday statement, Republican Congressman Kevin Kiley, who represents Placer County, called it an opportunity for Venezuelans to once again enjoy democracy, freedom, and prosperity.
Yeah, and Dustin, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, this has really kind of been more of a uniform response among Trump allies, the MAGA base, but when it comes to Republicans in California, especially in those swing districts in a year of a midterm, Has it been a uniform response, or is it a little more complicated than that?
I mean, I think the candidates so far have been largely supportive of President Trump. You know, you mentioned Representative Kevin Kiley, but I think in the long term, heading into this election year, it does create a potential challenge for them, because you have to remember that when President Trump first ran for office, his whole mantra on foreign policy is to end the forever wars and withdraw the U.S. from a lot of conflicts and engagement around the world. And this really is a direct contrast to that vision of foreign policy that a lot of the MAGA movement had supported, that vision of sort of more of a withdrawn, slightly sort of more internal looking, more isolationist type of foreign policy. And this is definitely not that. And the president is even talking about, you know, maybe military interventions in other places in the Western Hemisphere, including Cuba or Colombia. He's talked about wanting to take possession of Greenland for a long time. And so he's really pitching a very sort of expansionist view, not that more isolationist view that he ran on. And I think for swing district Republicans like Kevin Kiley, they now have to have to deal with foreign policy being at the center of the midterm elections. And that's a difficult debate for them when they have part of their base that really wanted to see the U.S. be less of a player on the world stage.
Gerardo, what have state lawmakers said on this? How have they reacted?
Yeah, and we spoke to Democratic State Senator Scott Wiener, who represents San Francisco. You know, he denounced the attack and even called for Trump's impeachment. Wiener says the operation lacked congressional authorization and used made-up pretexts to justify the attack. Here's what he told us.
Maduro is horrible, just to be clear. He's horrible, and he stole the last election. I'm not defending Maduro in any way. He has helped drag Venezuela down. But Venezuela has not done anything that would justify the U.S. invading and conquering it.
And Wiener, who is running for Nancy Pelosi's congressional seat, suggested the strike also serves as a political distraction for Trump's political troubles, you know, falling approval ratings, rising health care costs, and his connection to convicted sex offender and accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Mm.
Dustin, have you heard some reaction from state lawmakers, maybe Republicans that might have a different perspective?
I have yet to see that in terms of Republicans bucking their own party. We have seen some of that at the national level. You know, you have MAGA figures like Marjorie Taylor Greene and a handful of others speaking out and saying, you know, they really do not want to be engaged in running another country and in occupying another country's government. So far, we're not seeing a ton of pushback from California Republicans. There are nuances, you know, where some of them have said that they're concerned about prolonged engagement. And, you know, we've seen a bit of that. But so far, it seems like, most of the more prominent Republican voices have been pretty aligned behind President Trump.
You also mentioned that Governor Newsom weighed in. What did he have to say?
What really stood out to me about Governor Newsom, his comments were in line with a lot of other Democrats in terms of calling Maduro a thug, and, you know, saying he was a very bad guy, had stolen an election, but also saying that he needed to be, international law had been violated and that Congress should have been consulted before any of this happened. So Newsom struck that nuance. But what struck me is how long it took Governor Newsom to respond. You had other 2028 likely presidential hopefuls like Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris. They were responding within a matter of hours on Saturday over the weekend. And with Newsom, it wasn't until late Sunday that we received a comment from him on the attack and the arrest of Maduro. And Newsom, I should note, hasn't even tweeted about this on any of his office accounts or his personal account. And this is a kind of a rare departure for a governor who's really put his combative trolling social media presence at the center of his administration recent months, and especially his trolling of President Trump. And so his decision to kind of hold back on this tells me that there's a degree of calculation likely happening in terms of him wanting to appeal to centrist voters who, you know, might not like the idea of another war, but also just saw Maduro as a bad guy.
Of course, there are Venezuelans here in California with family abroad. Gerardo, you went out to some protests over the weekend in Sacramento. What have you learned about how they're feeling during this time?
Yeah, so Greg and I did attend a protest in downtown Sacramento this weekend. Demonstrators were condemning U.S. military action in Venezuela. The demonstration was part of a nationwide series of protests held in dozens of cities across the country. Isaac Quesada helped organize the Sacramento protests and spoke on behalf of the Party for Socialism and Liberation. He says the group opposes the type of foreign intervention happening in Venezuela.
Regardless of how you feel about Maduro, you should not be okay with a foreign country going in to overthrow a government under the guise of democracy and fighting narcotráfico, when we all know at the end of the day, it's for resources, and it's always been about resources. That has always been the reality of Latin America.
Quesada added he's concerned the conflict could further destabilize the region and increase fear among Venezuelan immigrants in the United States. I also spoke with Giselle Garcia, who works for NorCal Resist, a nonprofit that serves Venezuelan immigrants and others at risk of deportation. She learned about the strikes from several individuals they support.
A couple of them have also expressed guilt that they're here and their families are stuck back there.
Garcia says that while many Venezuelans are against Maduro and his regime, its toppling does little to address the existing conditions that motivated them to flee, like hyperinflation and poverty.
Yeah, and we are just in the initial days of all of this unfolding. Dustin, do you think this will be a big topic, a big issue as we get into the midterms, Venezuela and Maduro?
Absolutely. I mean, these midterm elections were and will still likely factor heavily on affordability and cost issues. But this really has thrown international policy and in the concept of another extended prolonged war to the center of the midterms. We're seeing candidates in all the major battleground races around the state speaking out on this. And I think, like I said earlier, it really puts Republicans in a tough position if, you know, they have to sort of thread that needle of communicating to voters that they don't want a prolonged forever war, but also, you know, that the Maduro was a bad figure. And it's not just about, you know, who holds these districts in California. California could really very well pave the road to the House majority for Democrats if they are able to pick up a couple of seats here in a year where, there's a Republican incumbent in the White House and a lot of factors likely favor Democrats. And so I think this could factor very heavily in those races that would determine the balance of the House.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And Dustin, we're going to move on to other big news in state politics in the last few minutes that we have with you. So later this week, Governor Newsom will deliver his final State of the State address at the state capitol. What do you think his message will be before he terms out?
Well, the first thing that I think will be very striking about this is the fact that he's going to do it in person. It's been about 5 years since this governor gave an in-person State of the State speech to the legislature. And while he's required to deliver a State of the State, he can do it in writing, which is what he did last year. And because of various factors in 2025, he actually pushed that back till last September. And that, you know, that included factors like the Palisades fire and other things that happened earlier in the year. So for him to not do it in writing and be at the legislature in person is a big change. And what the signals we've got so far from the governor's office are that he really wants to talk about progress in different areas where the state has done things like combated homelessness and maybe, you know, slowed the rise in homelessness. I think that'll be a big theme for him. He's going to talk about the expansion of early childcare education, expansion of health insurance access. Really, this is shaping up to be sort of a victory lap of sorts for the governor as he tries to paint a picture of the biggest accomplishments of his administration and set the stage for what's likely to be a presidential campaign for him heading into 2028.
Yeah, for having it in the traditional setting at the state capitol, it's kind of a full circle moment going from like Dodger Stadium during the pandemic to in writing last summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this governor really does not like giving teleprompter speeches. That is definitely not one of his favorite things. He really is a policy wonk, and he likes to speak off the cuff at press conferences or budget presentations. Part of that is because, you know, he has dyslexia, and the governor doesn't, you know, he's even said it's difficult for him to read off a teleprompter. And so him going back shows that this really is a big moment for him and a moment where he's setting the stage and trying to define the narrative about his last year in office.
Okay, so State of the State is going to be on Thursday. Then the next day on Friday, the governor will release his January budget proposal. That's a rough draft that will shapeshift a bunch before becoming finalized in the summer by state lawmakers. What do you think his priorities will be at a time of ongoing budget challenges?
Yeah, so the Legislative Analyst Office has projected an $18 billion budget deficit. Newsom has hinted in recent days that it might, the numbers could be better, and that could be in large part, as he said, from due to higher than expected revenues from a handful of large companies, likely tech companies. So the deficit number is really going to shape the whole debate. If there is a significant deficit, that really puts a lot of pressure on the governor to consider TEF cuts to programs like Medi-Cal, the program, health insurance program for uninsured Californians or underinsured Californians. So there could be a very tough debate about whether things like, premium charges for undocumented immigrants could help solve in that healthcare program could help solve the budget deficit. That sort of debate is going to be top of mind. And the counter to that the governor has to face is that there's a lot of pressures from within his own party to raise taxes, to raise revenues, to help solve that budget math. And there is already a ballot measure that's being floated by labor unions that would impose a one-time tax on billionaires. This would be a 5% one-time tax on the wealth of the top Californians. And the governor is skeptical, is not supportive of that ballot measure, but he faces a lot of pressure from labor unions that say you can't just cut your way out of this. But the counter from Silicon Valley leaders and others in the business community is that this could just drive more of those top business executives to either, reside outside of California or take their businesses out of California, which ultimately might result in less revenue than they're hoping. But it's the type of debate that is really going to force Newsom to pick his allies in this year before he launches a likely presidential campaign. Is he going to side with labor and more progressive forces within the Democratic Party, or is he going to be more closely aligned to Silicon Valley and the Chamber of Commerce types that have also been part of his base throughout his career? He's really in a tough spot when he has to make that decision call.
Dustin, thanks for kicking off 2026 for Insight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Up next, more than 900 laws were passed by lawmakers in California last year. We're going to break down some of the biggest ones that will be affecting our lives this new year. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.